Friends, when was the last time your church had a Missions Sunday? And how did it go? Did people take steps of obedience to the Great Commission? Or did the message go in one ear and out the other? Well, here at ABWE, our team has created a new resource that's everything that you need in one free resource packet to pull off an effective and biblically grounded Missions Sunday. We're calling it Send Sunday based on Acts 13, where the first missionaries are sent out from a local church. This isn't just getting people to think about missions. It's challenging each church to ask the question, Lord, whom would you send out from our midst? And how can we hold the rope for them? Download everything that you need for Send Sunday, including sermon resources, a sample order of worship, lesson plans, small group discussion guides, a prayer guide, and more. Everything that you'll need to make sure that Send Sunday effectively challenges your congregation with what the Word of God says about missions. Go to missionspodcast.com/sendsunday and get access now to this free toolkit. Again, missionspodcast.com/sendsunday. And we'll celebrate Send Sunday with you on June 8th, 2025. Greetings and welcome to the Missions Podcast, the show that explores your hard questions on missions, theology, and practice to help goers think and thinkers go. I'm Alex Kochman, Director of Communications and Engagement with ABWE. Joined once again for another conversation with Scott W. Dunford, pastor of Western Hills Church in San Mateo, California. And we're grateful that you've joined us as well as we talk about the intersection of church ministry, of the Great Commission, reaching the nations, and whatever Scott and I just happen to be thinking and reading about at any given moment. And speaking of reading, we are joined this week by actually a returning guest of the show. I don't know if many of you will remember, but our guest today did join us when we set up shop at the last T4G in 2022, joined us for an interview live at our booth there in person. But this time we're joined by this week's guest through the web, who Scott will introduce in just a moment, and excited to get into his writing and his work that is serving the local church. But before we dive into today's conversation, I want to remind you that this episode is brought to you not only by ABWE, but also through our gracious ministry partnership with Reformation Heritage Books. They want you to know that they're currently offering the Family Worship Bible Guide. I normally have a copy. It's over there. It's not on my desk. I'm not going to reach over and grab it because for those of you watching on YouTube, that wouldn't be a great experience watching me get up from behind the desk. But just take my word for it. Right off here, off camera, I'm looking at the copy of this book, and it is a wonderful resource that includes all sorts of prompts and questions to guide family discussions through each chapter of Scripture as you lead family worship. And so to learn more, you can go to heritagebooks.org/family worship. And because of our partnership with them, they want you to know that if you order, you will be able to use the promo code MissionsPod, all caps, as my producer Brian hands me this copy of the book. There you go. This is why you need to watch on video. It's right here in my hands. It really exists. And if you use the promo code MissionsPod in all caps, you'll get 10% off your order of anything on the Reformation Heritage Books website. So thank you to them for sponsoring. Also, thank you to all of our premium subscribers. For those of you that are supporting the show at $9.99 per month, you're enabling us to bring you more content, including our bonus episodes that we record each week. After the main conversation is over, we'll have another one of those this week. And you want to get access to that by going to missionspodcast.com/premium. Join today. We'd love to have you not only watch our bonus content, but also join our signal thread and get access to other regular webinars that we do and more behind the scenes content. All right. With all of that out of the way, Scott, it's good to see you today. And why don't you introduce our guest for us?
Yeah, let's dive into it. I am really excited about this conversation because as a pastor of a small church, you're always looking for help and resources. And one of the biggest helps and resources to me have been the Ministry of Capitol Hill. Baptist Church and Nine Marks and all the great resources that they make available for very affordably online. Yeah. And so it's great to have Caleb Morrell. He is an assistant pastor at Capitol Hill Baptist Church, overseeing their internship program, which, you know, maybe in the overtime we can mention that a little bit more, because I love what they're doing with that. He's also a doctoral student at Midwestern Baptist Theological Seminary, which we love. And he and his wife have been at Capitol Hill for about 5 years now on staff, and for probably another 7 years beyond that. But Caleb, really excited to have you back on our show. Thank you for all the work you've been doing, and welcome back. I have to admit, this is embarrassing, but I forgot that we did that interview, and you and I were talking off camera. I totally forgot that we had done that before. So I apologize.
But great to be back with you. Hopefully it won't take another conference for us to get back together again.
And hopefully this interview is more memorable for Scott than the last one was.
I got to be honest, those conferences are a blur. So I'm sure Caleb can forgive me for that.
They sure are. Well, speaking of things that are memorable, though, Capitol Hill Baptist Church, Scott, you referenced it. Caleb, for those not familiar, and we're familiar here in South Central Pennsylvania, we're just a short drive from you all. But remind us about Capitol Hill Baptist Church and the ministry that you have there.
Sure. So the church was founded in 1878, and it's the building and the where the congregation gathers is 6 blocks from the Capitol building. That's where we've been ever since 1878. And our current pastor is Mark Dever. He's been at the church for 30 years and has really led an effort at revitalizing the church, seeing it grow and not just and become a church that can support other churches and ministries. And that's largely expressed through the ministry of Nine Marks, which equips pastors and churches with biblical resources for building healthy churches. Man, does it sound like pastors talk around here? Mainly through its publishing of resources and making those available online. And then, our own church has been a missionary sending church and pastoral training church. And that gets to what I spend a lot of my time on, which is our pastoral internship program, where we have 6 to 8 pastors or pastors in training every semester, read books, write papers, and just be trained and equipped in the doctrine of the church.
And Scott, before you ask the next question, I just got to hop in here too. I mean, when Caleb talks about the internship program, a lot of churches have an internship program. I mean, I would say if you know anything about Mark, you know that he takes very, very seriously the mentorship of young men. And if you've seen and met any of the guys that have been through this internship program, incredible, deep discipleship and training happens. And it's not for the faint of heart at all. So it's a rigorous program. I've known several of the guys that have come through it and grateful for the ministry that they've had.
Yeah, I mean, and I know this isn't about Mark Dever, so forgive me, Caleb, for this. But like one of the things, sure. Alex and I have gone to many conferences. I know you have too, Caleb, and you kind of get used to the main speakers, of which Mark Dever has been one, behind a paywall, so to speak. You know, it's like they got their little group and you don't get near them. What I've loved, and I think this reflects, you know, what you're doing there at Capitol Hill, is that when I go to these conferences, I often will see Mark in a corner with 3 pastors who nobody knows. I mean, some of the guys I know because they're in little churches doing hard work in hard places, pouring his life into them. And I just, that's been a model for me. You know, I just, not that I'm anywhere near that, but like if I could end my pastoral ministry and have these young men who I've poured my life into, that I really appreciate that. That is very unusual today. And I'm really thankful for that. So, okay, switching gears, back to what we're talking about. So, you know, Sunday school is one of those things that has kind of seen its ebb and flows. A lot of churches just completely do away with it. Up until just a few weeks ago, our church even hadn't had Sunday school in years. And we just restarted our adult.
We're relaunching ours too. Yeah.
Sounds like it's time to make Sunday schools great again, would you say?
Something like that.
I think so.
So obviously in the history of Capitol Hill, Sunday school has played a role. So what can churches learn from that when it comes to making disciples and equipping the next generation? How have you seen Capitol Hill use Sunday school as a way of equipping people?
Yeah, great question. And there's a contemporary answer and there's an older answer. And the older answer is that the church really grew out of a Sunday school. And that wasn't unusual for churches or Baptist churches in the 19th century. The Sunday school movement really was at its peak when our church was founded in the 1870s and 80s. You see this at Spurgeon's Metropolitan Tabernacle. You see this across the United States and the world. The Sunday school movement in the 19th century really grew out of a realization that there was a lack of biblical literacy in society. There was a societal breakdown happening. Some of the forces of liberalism, modernism were starting to rear their heads. And they were really concerned that particularly the urban poor or the country poor didn't have access to schooling or education or churches where they were being taught the Bible. And the question was, how would the experiment in American democracy work if we didn't have a virtuous citizenry? And if we didn't have a in order to have a virtuous citizenry, how are we going to get that without the Bible, without a Christian worldview? And so the Sunday school movement was an education movement in familiarizing particularly the younger generation in scripture. And it's a remarkable movement. And our church grew out of a Sunday school started on Capitol Hill by just normal church members who attended churches over a mile away, but they recognized that in their neighborhood, the emerging neighborhood of Capitol Hill, which was just a farm at the time, they lacked a church. And so, you know, the alley children or the newsies or the children of immigrants or former slaves, where were they going to be trained in scripture? There was no church in walking distance. So they said, let's start a prayer meeting and let's start a Sunday school and let's start teaching these children in our neighborhood the Bible. And there was a missional purpose. There was also a civic purpose to it. And they said that they literally had to go through the highways and the byways to gather these children and invite them in and teach them the Bible. So that's what the church grew out of. And that very much remained a significant part of the church's vision until the throughout much of the 20th century. And I think we can think of Sunday school today as, well, that's childcare. You know, that's just what we do for the kids so the adults can have an undistracted experience during the worship service. It was very different then. Kids were in the service, but then Sunday schools were in the afternoon. Mm-hmm. And so members would really give a lot of their time toward that educational work on Sunday afternoons. And it's humbling to think about the amount of effort and labor that just normal Christians, normal church members were putting in to reach their neighborhood.
Are there a lot of details from that time about how they went about doing that?
Yeah, in terms of like the curriculum or what they spent their time on. I mean, it was...
Well, yeah, even just the logistics of like, you know, being all together, having to feed people, being able to then minister, you know, for that period of time. I know there's so many records from Capitol Hill that have survived. I mean, if you read any of the books, those kind of things kind of tend to come out. I'm just wondering what survived from that era about how they went about doing that as the church began to be formed.
Yeah, I know that it started by renting a schoolhouse at, you know, just a block away from where the church gathers today. And they would bring their own chairs for the kids to sit on. I mean, it was really kind of just all hands on deck, but the basic things they were covering were Bible literacy, singing hymns, and teaching prayer. So it was basic catechesis happening. And their prayer was that, yeah, those seeds sown would grow up into mighty oaks in the Lord. And there's a great story that I tell in the book, which was, you know, frequently recounted, of how when they finally started to build the church building, the woman who started the prayer meeting and started the Sunday school, her name was Celestia Ferris. She told her Sunday school girls her Sunday school children to collect bricks if they found them on the roads as they're, you know, walking to Sunday school. If you see a brick, bring a brick and we'll start collecting a pile and, you know, everybody does their part and maybe we'll have some bricks for building our church building. So two very enterprising young girls went to a local brickyard. And they asked the brickyard owner for some bricks. And he asked the girls what they needed bricks for. And they said, well, we're building a church. And our Sunday school teacher told us to collect bricks. So he said, I'll tell you what I'll do. I'll send you a whole cartload of bricks. They were so encouraged by his generosity that they went to another brickyard. And they told the next brickyard owner what the first brickyard owner had done. And he sent another load of bricks. So the story goes, as it's recounted, that we were able to build the entire front of the initial chapel from bricks donated, largely collected by these children in the Sunday school. Wow. How about that for a building campaign?
I love beautiful. It. That's incredible. You know, I obviously don't think of Capitol Hill as a farming community these days. And sometimes what's growing there isn't the most encouraging, but when I think about Washington, D.C. and the surrounding area now, you think of it as a place of such transience. You think a place where people are coming and going and certainly making careers, but then also, you know, all of the people working in various administrations and roles, you know, you might be out of there with the next election cycle, right? And so what does that mean for the soil, if you'll, you know, think in those agricultural terms? What does that mean for the soil of making disciples, working, trying to lead people in a setting like that in the church? And I'm especially thinking about the difficulty that can cause for sending missionaries and raising up missionaries. We see this abroad with international churches in some of these global cities. It can be hard to establish a sending base of missions there and reaching out locally as well, again, because of the transience of the congregants. And I wonder if that's been a factor for you guys as well, as you've thought about not only your role there on Capitol Hill, but then also to the nations. How have you approached that?
Yeah, it's a great question. And there's both the transience, which means there's a consistent influx of folks coming in, and particularly on Capitol Hill, it's an influx from around the world, and it's an influx from around the nation. So particularly because a lot of people come to DC to work for Congress or for members of Congress, you have members representing every state in the United States. And so that's a wonderful opportunity for training and discipling, particularly young people. There's a lot of young people at the church, and it's been that way for a long time. And so as a church, we're constantly seeking to have clear teaching on what a Christian is, to make sure that's crystal clear. We want to teach carefully what the church is and what church membership involves. And we want to teach about the responsibilities Christians have for one another and for the Great Commission. And so that even if we have folks with us for 2 or 3 years, we're then sending them on back to their home state, home church, or somewhere around the world, better equipped to serve the Lord Jesus Christ in the context of their local church.
Hey, listeners, we know you believe in missions. Otherwise, you probably wouldn't be listening to or watching this show. But have you ever wondered what your next step with the Great Commission should be? Maybe the Lord is leading you to serve somewhere yourself. Maybe the Lord is calling you to be a part of sending someone from out of your own church. Well, wherever you are with missions, if you're ready to get serious and find what your next step is, ABWE's 24-hour demo event is for you. Now, it's great to listen to a podcast about missions, but there's nothing that beats the in-person fellowship that can only take place face-to-face, where you're alongside other people that are in your similar station of life, thinking and praying together about your next step. So if you want to join us at our next event, they happen all throughout the year at our Harrisburg, Pennsylvania-based international headquarters. You can go to demo.abwe.org. Again, that's demo.abwe.org, and use the promo code podcast for a discount on your registration fee. So it takes all excuses away. What are you waiting for? Come find your next step with the Great Commission at demo.abwe.org, promo code podcast. Now back to the show.
So as we think about the uniqueness of where you're located and of, I don't know. I mean, there's been a handful of Baptist pastor or Baptist presidents throughout the years. Maybe some of them attended Capitol Hill. I don't know. You can fill us in if they are. But no matter what, you're right in the heart of what's going on politically, for sure. And we see the changes that are happening in our country, that have been happening in our country, that are always happening in our country. So what have you learned as you studied the history, but also as you're experiencing it now, about the way that a local church can interact and have influence, how we can encourage our people to have the right kind of influence, the role the role of the church in the city where God's placed it, and how can churches in similarly located locations? I think of my church. We're a small little church in the middle of one of the most, probably the Athens of the current of the world right now in the San Francisco Bay Area. How can churches be strategic about engaging the communities while still they live in, while still being focused on the Great Commission?
What I learned in studying about our church's history is that faithfulness doesn't always appear strategic, but faithfulness is always strategic. I worry a little bit sometimes that our eye toward what is strategic or what seems strategic isn't the same thing as God's view of what's strategic. So when I think about the members who came together to pray and form a church, I think they thought they were doing something strategic, but it probably looked pretty unimpressive. I mean, they were praying, and they actually prayed for 11 years before a church even formed. And it didn't seem like an ideal location at the time the eastern part of D.C. was very much the outskirts of the city. Nothing was really happening. Everything was happening downtown by the White House or Georgetown. And so I think I think they were just trying to be faithful. I think they thought we're called to serve a local church. We have no local church in the vicinity. We want to start a church and be faithful. And the Lord has repaid that faithfulness over time and shown how strategic it was. But I just say that because I think some of us can look at our lives and think, I'm trying to be strategic, but I'm mainly just trying to be faithful. And I pray that the Lord, with his grand strategy, will take my small faithfulness and multiply it.
Expand upon that then too. And I think faithfulness is the right word. I'm somebody who's kind of, I'll just be honest, I'm skeptical to frustrated with kind of the church consultant class that wants to emphasize, you know, strategy and success and innovation. And I'm not saying that any of those things are fundamentally wrong, but I think, you know, things like you've emphasized in this book, a history of biblical exposition and education, right, in the Sunday school background of the church and those sorts of things, and then ordinary faithfulness week in and week out through the worship. I think that's where our focus needs to be in church leadership. We're faithful, and then the Lord chooses to bless from coming out of that. And I think that's how we approach missions as well. And so maybe within that vein, then, how has the church historically thought about missions? What did it see as its missionary obligation? Was that always in the DNA of the church? To what degree is it in the DNA of the church now? I know, you know, even in recent years, there's been joking around within the Nine Marks sphere to take that as kind of maybe representative of Capitol Hill. You know, should that be the 10th mark, right? Missions, should that be the 10th mark of a healthy church or not? And I know that those conversations have happened recently. What took place historically in terms of the church's relationship with sending cross-cultural workers out?
Yeah. So from the very beginning, the church very much viewed themselves as a missionary church and a missionary sending church. I mean, that's why they formed to start this Sunday school, to start this church that would be an agent of change and evangelism within their community. And very early on, the church began supporting workers. Our first supported missionary was a domestic missionary to the Native Americans in Arizona. Mm-hmm. I believe the year was 1909. But even earlier than that, the church had a women's missionary union, which was very common in Baptist churches. But the women of the church would come together on a monthly basis. They would pray. They would share news that they were collecting of missionaries, and they would raise funds. And I've heard stories from members who remember their mothers who were very poor. I mean, one particular story of a single mother raising a family on Capitol Hill who would scrimp and save to just be able to drop a few more nickels and pennies and dimes to the offerings that the Women's Missionary Union was raising to support missionaries. And so the church was very faithful in supporting missions and the Great Commission. And even to the present day, being a missionary sending church and a church that's engaged in the Great Commission, it looks like having a local footprint in our local evangelism. I think it looks like being generous in raising up and sending out members and pastors. So having an eye toward not just being gluttonous as a church and trying to grow as large as we can possibly be, and we're trying to expand our brand here in Washington, D.C., but looking to plant churches and send pastors out to make sure that the gospel isn't dependent on one single church in our community, but to really celebrate other churches that are being planted in the area. And so that's very much what chapter 14, the last chapter in the book, is about, is how a church can have a healthy perspective on lowercase c Catholicity, meaning we're not the only Christians here. And there's even good work going on beyond Baptists. And we want to be excited and generous in celebrating good work that God is doing outside of us. And today that mainly looks like investing in our pastoral training programs, in using even our staff positions to hire future pastors that we hope to have a few years serving us and then send them out to go pastor elsewhere. Really, it's just a perspective on taking the resources the Lord has blessed us with and then leveraging that to do good to others.
I have a follow-up question along those lines. Do you find that, you know, when we're in this world, whether it's Nine Marks, whether it's the internship program, some of the other things that Capitol Hill Baptist Church has done in the past, is doing now, you know, a lot of the focus there can be internal. here's what healthy shepherding looks like. Here's what healthy pastoral ministry looks like. Here's how to be a good church member. Do you feel like when we're in that realm of conversation and the churches that have been influenced by Capitol Hill Baptist Church, is there a temptation to be inward focused, or have you seen the outwardness has been a consistent part of the DNA in those types of churches? Because I do find, you know, that gluttonous tendency, I like the kind of shocking way that you put it. You know, that's a real temptation for Baptists, for Reformed, Protestants that are maybe even more, you know, serious and excited about aspects of doctrine and church history. It's really tempting to consume and to focus on all of the internal workings of the church and to forget mission in the process. Do you see that pull in your midst and in the history as you look back?
I think there's a, you know, and to use an analogy, I think if you have a family that's very focused on serving the community, let's say the family's really big on foster care.
Yeah.
You need to be wise and discerning as a family to make sure you're not stretching the fabric of your own family for the sake of serving others. And there's a tension there. And it can be both and, but if you're not careful, you can push your family to the breaking point for the sake of just leveraging yourselves for the sake of others. I think a healthy church is going to be able to discern the difference. And there's a time as a parent to sit down with your kids and say, hey, I realize ministry is challenging this season. You're making a lot of sacrifices. Our family's making a lot of sacrifices for the sake of others in a way that you're not immediately receiving the benefits from now. But actually, this is part of following Jesus. And I think you're going to look back and say, this was the best thing our family could have done. But I think we're constantly trying to check that as a church. I think it is possible to go too far. I think it's also possible to be too inward focused, as you said, and just say, well, we're not going to do anything for others because we just need to focus on ourselves. I think, you know, in different churches, different cultures may have different temptations. I think our present moment of time, 2025, I think there is a lot of self focus going on in our culture. I think there's a lot of narcissism writ large and a sense of like, well, I need to focus on my well-being, on, you know, I need to take a mental health day. And that's not to say those things aren't real and we shouldn't take those seriously, but there's a lot of self-focus. And I think there can be a danger of churches thinking mainly about, well, we just need to serve ourselves. Mm. Even if it's, of course, that's never going to be stated, but yeah, it takes wisdom and discernment as pastors to seek to lead the congregation, to make godly sacrifices for the sake of following our crucified King and risen Lord, for whom the way of the cross was not an easy road. Mm-hmm. And we should expect there to be challenges on the way, but it takes careful leadership. I think there have been times in our church's history, particularly in the 1960s and 70s, when that was a particular danger. The church was grappling with a changing urban environment, changing racial dynamics in the city. The members were largely moving to the suburbs. And a lot of our messaging was focusing on ease and the programs that the church could offer. And we would advertise ourselves as, you know, basically you can have whatever you want. We can be the church that gives you whatever you want. Mm. And of course, that's going to grow over time, a mentality that isn't able to make big sacrifices or have hard conversations. And our church felt that in the 1960s over racial issues. We were struggling to grapple with and tackle those topics. But we had been so imbibed for so long in a consumer mentality that, of course, we were going to struggle with hard conversations. Mm. So I think to bring it all the way back, it starts with defining what a Christian is and what the Christian life looks like and what church membership is and what it isn't. It's not a country club. It's an army, and we're in the Lord's army. We're following him into battle. We're going to do this together. But if you don't define that right, I think people's expectations aren't set up well for what it looks like to actually follow Jesus.
I think that's a great way of approaching that. It's a matter of discipleship, right? Being outward with your faith is not an option. Just like we talked about a few weeks here ago when Scott, when you and I were talking about Philippians and striving for the faith. Scott, before I hand it over to you again, though, too, you know, everything you're saying, Caleb, reminds me of something that I recently heard our friend of the show here, who's our director of training, E.D. Burns, another good Baptist, but E.D. Burns here doing some training with ABWE and our leadership and walked us through, and I guess I had heard this, but maybe didn't remember either the statistic or what have you, but he shared that if you look at seminary programs, if you look at Christian universities, Bible colleges, the thing that's being shut down and is the first thing to go when there's budget cuts is the missions program. That's consistently happened. I can name at least one recent example. By contrast, the most popular degree programs that are growing are counseling. Yes. And, you know, maybe on the one hand, it's good that we're being a little introspective and realizing we've got issues and baggage that we need to sort out. And there's probably real value in that. On the other hand, you could look at that and say the overall emphasis in American evangelicalism is away from being outward with our faith. And it's towards being overly introspective and focused on ourselves and self-actualizing and all that comes with that. So I think we do need to, ironically, without staring too long and hard, take a good look in the mirror and recognize that we're missing something if our definition of being a Christian doesn't also include a real component of mission, Scott, and that our pastors and our churches are encouraging people with, hey, going out, making disciples, that's part and parcel of just following Jesus. That's normative, right, Scott?
Yeah, I have so many thoughts about that. Some colleges and universities, I'm thrilled when their missions program shuts down, but that's a whole nother discussion for another day. Yeah. I this wasn't on our questions, but as you were talking, Caleb, I couldn't help but think about this. A lot of churches have tried to do, I think, what Capitol Hill has done well, which is, you know, reproduce itself and not just grow into some kind of mega church. A lot of people are shocked because of the influence of Capitol Hill when they visit Capitol Hill. Like, actually, it's a pretty, you know, it's a lot bigger than any church I've been in, but it's small compared to its footprint. What do you think has, obviously, that takes a lot of discipleship of a congregation to have them steward their resources, both in staffing. I mean, you're a staff person focusing uniquely on internships. Like, that's a very outward focused ministry that isn't going to make Capitol Hill Church into a mega church. What do you think has uniquely been done at Capitol Hill over the years to help them have the mentality to say, it's good to put our resources both in personnel and in financial resources into seeing more churches planted, as opposed to just saying, hey, let's build this thing as big as we can get it?
Yeah, I mean, in the most immediate short term, it's the vision of our senior pastor, Mark Dever. I mean, he very much brought that vision of discipling, making disciples, missions, and made sure that that was front and center in his pastoral ministry at the church. And I think what's been encouraging working on the church's history is to see how much continuity there is in that, that there's actually a long history of faithfulness and sacrifice that goes on much longer than Mark Dever's tenure here. But he very much brought a perspective of in his personal life, seeking to evangelize and make disciples and to be a model of that for the church, to set a high bar in his own personal life. And then to encourage that in the way we leveraged our staffing. And I don't think that's always come easily. I don't think that's always been without hiccups, but I think the fruit will be evident through eternity, we trust. And I think particularly when you look back though at how much riches we have and we're so blessed. And when you study the generations in the past, I find it so humbling. Like our church building, for instance, was built in 1911, 1912, and it was built by people who made a lot less money than we do today, even if we account for inflation. And it was a much smaller congregation than we are today. And yet you just look at this building that they gave us. I mean, we didn't do anything to get this building. We inherited it from them. So it is their faithfulness that is signified and testified to in this building. And you just think about the sacrifices that they made, and it's humbling. So we're not doing something completely new when we're talking about being generous with our giving and being generous with our lives, being generous with who we have on our church staff and our internship program. We're being who the church has always been from the days of Acts until the present.
We're at time here. And so what I want to do, though, is dive into, okay, how do we prepare for the future? How do we think long term? As you're sharing some of the history, I'm thinking about my own church. Our church was planted in 1914. We're preaching through a series on our mission and vision and values right now. And the goal is that the Lord would grant us another 110 years, that the Lord would be gracious in that way as well. How can we plan long-term here and not just be living in the moment? And so we want to talk about that in our bonus segment, Caleb, if you'll be so kind as to stick around. But for those of our listeners who are going to listen to this main episode and want to know more how they can get in touch with you and follow you and maybe get a hold of the book, can you share how they can do so?
Sure. So this book on the history of Capital Baptist Church is called A Light on the Hill, How a Local Church in the Nation's Capital Influenced Evangelicalism. It'll be released with Crossway on April 1st. No joke, April 1st, 2025. So get a copy and keep learning of the good work that God's been doing here that he does all over the world.
Very good. Yeah, get a copy of the book. It is no joke. And we're grateful to see the Lord's work through your ministry. And what an exciting privilege you have to share the story of faithful saints in the past. Join us for our bonus segment. Again, go to missionspodcast.com/premium to get access now. And for your gift of the ministry, to the ministry rather, of $9.99 per month, we will make available to you all of our bonus information segments, Signal, exclusive chat thread, and more to keep you equipped and to help you, yes, you, make disciples on your own as well. The Missions Podcast is brought to you by our ministry partnership with Reformation Heritage Books and is powered by ABWE. To learn more about ABWE, the Association of Baptists for World Evangelism, and to take your next step in the Great Commission, go to abwe.org, and you can learn more on there. To reach out to us and share ideas for guests or subjects of discussion, email alex@missionspodcast.com. We'd love to hear from you. Until our next episode, go make disciples of all the nations, and we'll see you soon.